Wayfair's big sale is here. It's Way Day, and it's on now. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. Now through October 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So build your cart and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome in. It is Old School here on a Tuesday. Short show coming your way with you for the next hour. Austin Orman here. No Jay Foreman. Got a new fill-in here on Old School. The host of Early Break, 6 to 9 a.m. here, 93.7 Ticket and theticketfm.com. Mr. Jake Sorensen. Jake, welcome to Old School.
Good to be here, Austin. Good to be here. Thank you for having me for this short segment here. Appreciate that.
Indeed.
It's late in the day for me.
It is.
Usually, I'm out of here by now. Been doing stuff, but I gladly obliged to help you out. That's what we do at the station. We help out.
Indeed. We also help out our listeners by giving them a chance to win $1,000 in cash four different times a day. We are here for you, ticket listeners. Get your phones out.
Can I do it too?
No.
Oh, Austin,
sorry. We are not eligible to win.
You're no fun.
We are the ones giving the money away, so we are not eligible to win. We will not decrease your odds by texting in ourselves. 508-777-1000. That's the number that you're going to want to text for your chance to win $1,000. Text the word CAR, C-A-R, CAR, to 508-777-1000, or you can enter CAR on our website. Go to theticketfm.com, click on Cash Blitz, enter the word CAR for your chance to win. This is Old School, brought to you by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Special Ingredients and Butcher Shop, 3 Lincoln locations and 1 up in Omaha. If you're watching on stream, yes, the commercial banner is still up, and yes, we are here having some issues with our cameras. Uh-oh. We'll rectify those as quickly as we can. But Jake, a World Series matchup is set. We have the Dodgers, and we have the Blue Jays. A dramatic Game 7 come-from-behind win for Toronto, knocking off the Seattle Mariners. Kind of felt like an upset, but it wasn't. People forget Toronto was the one seed in the American League. Seattle, I believe, was the two seed in the American League with the other first round bye. Let's start with the American League side of things before we get to the National League side of things with the Dodgers. First and foremost, good on Toronto. That's a team that, I mean, you and I as Royals fans didn't like very much back in 2015.
No,
they were the
Joey Bats and all those guys.
Edwin Encarnacion. Yeah. Troy Tulowitzki was their midseason addition.
David Price there at that point, too.
David Price was there, tipping his pitches, his changeup specifically.
That's too bad.
Wasn't it just a shame? Gordo was on it. Moose was on it. They figured it out. I don't really have anything against Toronto. I am just heartbroken for Mariners fans and that team. We know their 116-win season that ended up short of the World Series getting beat by the Yankees. They've been in Seattle playing baseball for 48 years and never sniffed a World Series. I got some family connections back to Seattle. Had, for my money, the best player in the American League this year in Kyle Raleigh, non-Bobby Witt Jr. division, of course. Let's get that caveat out there. Top three pitching staff in baseball in terms of the rotation and the bullpen. Just unable to get it done. I'm not a huge believer in sports curses. Seattle might actually own one.
It's comparable to me, Austin, to the Lions in the NFL. The Lions have been down forever. They've had some good years in the past, Barry Sanders, but never got to the Super Bowl. And then, of course, a couple years ago, they're up 14 points twice on the Niners in the NFC title game with the chance to go to the Super Bowl. And they blow the game and fail to get there. The next year, hey, we'll respond. We're the one seed in the NFC. And here come the Commanders getting five picks of Jared Goff, leading to an upset win, Commanders to the title game. And so it's similar. You know, I think we all want to see these teams like the Mariners and the Lions get it done and finally get over the hump. But at the same time, I want America to be the World Series teams. You know, we got one Canadian team. I don't root for them. I root for America in this one, USA. And so we got the Dodgers, who are the new Yankees. All they do is win World Series versus Toronto and the Blue Jays. And by the way, I have been to the Rogers Center before. I've been outside of it.
Ooh.
I walked into an Argonauts game.
Hello.
CFL back about 10 years ago, same year as the Royals and the Blue Jays in the World Series.
How many Calgary Flames jerseys did you see there?
Not many. Calgary is a different side of the country, isn't it?
Well, I just remember you seeing a Calgary Flames jersey on the sidewalk.
No, that was the Senators.
Oh, that was Ottawa Senators. That's what it was.
It still
blows
my mind. I've never seen
Senators.
That, yeah, thank you for that. Was crazy. In Lincoln, Nebraska, I saw someone wearing an Ottawa Senators, like, nice pullover. I said, "What? Where am I? What's happening?" The most forgotten franchise in the history of sports was being donned on the sidewalks by our station just a few months ago. But happy for Toronto. Not happy for the Dodgers, sick of the Dodgers, but I guess even though I like to have the USA win these, I'm going for the Blue Jays. I really am.
How about this? The Blue Jays last appeared in the World Series in 1993 and yet have won a championship more recently than any Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup.
That's tough. That's tough. You know, Edmonton's been at back-to-back years in the Stanley Cup finals. They've lost to the Panthers back-to-back years.
USA, baby.
Connor McDavid, good player. Like, look at me talking hockey here, by the way.
I was so bummed I did not get to see McDavid when I was out in Vegas for the first time. The Oilers played the Knights, and McDavid was still out at that point. I was bummed.
I hear you. It is a bummer. But, you know, too bad for Canada. So someday, it'll be your luck. It won't be this year. The Dodgers will probably win in four or five games. It's who they are. They don't lose. They don't lose.
But they could because they're bullpen.
But they don't.
But they could.
But they don't.
I'm just saying, but they could.
The Brewers had a magical season, and they didn't have a chance against the Dodgers. I mean, it was close games to get that, but Shohei Ohtani is a cheat code in every sense of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Three homers, 10 strikeouts, best game ever by a pro, ever.
Yeah,
if it's not the best, it's top five ever by a professional athlete. Mm-hmm. It's in baseball.
What gives me the nod for Shohei is that it was in a clinching game. Even if they were, obviously, they swept, and so there's less pressure on a game four when you're up 3-0 than a game seven when you're tied 3-3. But these other games that are in that conversation with Shohei were regular season games or not an LCS chance to go to the World Series type games.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the guy that hit two grand slams in a game that he pitched. That's pretty cool.
Yes.
I'm sure Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron did something like that. But 64-91, I think, brings up the point that you would, Jake, and a lot of other people would in picking the Dodgers just from the pitching side of things. Why do you need a bullpen if your starters go 8 innings?
Blake Snell, 8 innings the first game. We had a complete game, but was it Yamamoto?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Yeah. He gave first batter home run, and then he went the rest of the way. No problems at all.
Mm-hmm.
The Dodgers are cheaters. You know, I respect them because I have to, but I am sick of them.
I get it. I get that. I am, though, pulling for the Dodgers in this World Series.
Because of USA?
I mean, that's a little bit of it, obviously.
Wave the flag, Austin.
USA, USA. My uncle has been a Dodgers fan for a long time. Did go through the wilderness there in the early, mid-2000s and has come out the other side much stronger for it. But for my uncle's sake, I will pull for the Dodgers. For America's sake, I will pull for the Dodgers. I do hope we get a 6 or 7 game series.
Wait, because mid-2000s, we're talking about Sean Green, we're talking about Jeff Kent in the mid-2000s.
Well,
right?
They both had good players, but let me pull up their sports reference page, because the Dodgers weren't always this
I understand
machine.
That.
That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Jeff Kent.
Matt Kemp.
They had Utley after he went.
Andre Ethier.
Right after the Phillies, right?
That Chase was Utley. Early 2010.
Okay, yeah, Matt Kemp. There we go. Andre Ethier. There we go. There's some names there.
So
Adrian Gonzalez.
In 2000, let's see here. 2000, 2001, 2003, 2004, the Dodgers missed the playoffs. Now they had 86 wins.
27 years ago, Austin.
But just let me get there. Let me get there.
Sorry.
3-1 out of the NLDS in 04. No playoffs, sub 500 by 20 games in 05. Swept out of the NLDS in 2006. No playoffs in 2007. back-to-back NLCS losses in five games in 2008-2009, and then fourth, third, second in the division, kicking off the Dodgers that we know and love to hate, I would say, right now. They missed the playoffs for the most recent time in 2012. Otherwise, NLCS, DS, DSCS, World Series, World Series, NLDS won the World Series, NLCS, DS, DS, World Series, World Series again this year.
Well, I would say in terms of the Dodgers, I'm not a fan of them, but seeing Chaz Ravine and, you know, packed, that they show up to Dodgers games. Like they, you can laugh about the support of the Rams and the Chargers and, you know, the Lakers get fans, of course. Clippers don't have got that many fans, but like they show up for the Dodgers. So I commend LA for being on time when it's impossible to be on time out there. So they mean something. So I guess they do deserve that team to be good because they show up for it.
Are you on the side that the Dodgers are breaking baseball? Do we need to kneecap the Dodgers, or does the rest of baseball need to up its game?
Baseball needs to catch up. The Dodgers, I mean, they paid Ohtani $75 billion to go there, and you know that's
and only on the hook for 2 a year.
Yeah, people can't exactly you know pay all that, obviously. But he's one player, and he's incredible. Like everybody can. There's no salary cap in baseball. Last time I checked, Austin, right? Is that still the case?
Correct.
So what's the problem here? Everybody can spend. The Yankees spend, and they can spend. The Red Sox, the Royals will never spend that much, but they're spending more than they have ever right now, and that's great to see them trying. They're a playoff contending team, which is fun. Like the Dodgers, the thing about baseball is you can have the most incredible regular season ever and not show up in the postseason, and you're done. You could have the most expensive roster in the history of sports, and it comes down to, are you winning when it matters? Think about
Mets.
Think about long time early Clayton Kershaw. Amazing in the regular season, but sucked in the postseason.
I put half of that on Dave Roberts.
And that hurt them, but these are great rosters that failed to get there. And the Dodgers finally get over the hump, but they've been winning more often than not in the playoffs now. But having these expensive rosters means nothing when it comes down to sudden death games in the playoffs.
Well, it doesn't mean nothing. What it does is it gives you a higher margin for error.
Understand.
It gives you more wiggle room. Because to your point, I mean, the Royals have won a World Series more recently than the Yankees.
Which is beautiful.
It is. Let's not forget
again.
That.
The
Kansas City Royals have won a World Series, a baseball championship, more recently than the New York Yankees.
Ha, ha, ha.
Indeed. It's beautiful. It is sweet music to my ears. But it's inarguable that having a high payroll, it doesn't promise you anything, but it does give you more wiggle room. The more good players you have on your
team,
the better you're going to be. Like Los Angeles, the Dodgers this year, in a down year for them, you know how many regular season games they won?
93.
And that's a down year.
It's a bad year for them.
And that's pretty crazy. But here's the other part of it. Their starting rotation was banged up throughout the year. They were working through some things. The guy they paid another bajillion dollars to in Roky Sasaki was AWOL, bad, and then on the injured list. And then in AAA, figuring some stuff out. And then this is a guy that they can just trot out there as their closer all of a sudden.
Yep.
They're on 101 with a forkball or a splitter, whatever you want to call it, that drops off the table in his first major league experience. It's crazy. 89-85 on our starter Heyman Jewelers text line. I can't root for the Dodgers. Hated the Yankees for this strategy, and the Dodgers cranked that bleep up to 11. So now they are second on my FM list after the Cardinals.
Okay. Kudos to that person.
I didn't think I would ever root for the Dodgers, but playing a team from Canada is going to make me do it.
That's the problem here. I mean, Austin, of all the teams in baseball, they're playing a Canadian team.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they're playing the Mariners, I would don Mariners gear. I'd say, come on, let's go Tridents. Let's do this. Let's do it, Mariners. But I don't know if I can support the Blue Jays, even though I liked my visit to Toronto 10 years ago and saw the place they play in. I don't know. Can't do it.
I'm just anti-conference/division rooting as well. Just because the Blue Jays came from the AL doesn't mean I'm going to automatically throw my support behind them
for some sort of American Mariners League. Though?
Well, I would have, but that's because it's the Mariners, not because it's American League.
Okay.
That's a different situation. 64-91, second biggest payroll versus fifth biggest in the World Series. The discrepancy does matter. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm saying, to Jake's point, it's not everything. It gives you a higher margin for error. The more good players you have, the better. I mean, look at the Texas Rangers. They missed the playoffs. That was an expensive roster, but they were in it till the end because of why? They're big name players. What the Dodgers have done almost better than anyone in the sport is, yes, pay for free agents, pay for international signings. Okay, I get that. What goes under the radar is how well the Dodgers have drafted and developed. As much money as they spend on players, they also invest in their infrastructure. There is nothing, and I mean nothing, stopping 29 other teams from investing in their infrastructure, their scouting, their drafting department, their facilities and their minor league complexes and beyond, their coaching staffs at that level. There is nothing stopping Major League Baseball teams from investing in that way. So yes, the Dodgers pulled off a heist for Mookie Betts that continues to look worse and worse for the Red Sox as time passes. Yes, they stole Shohei Ohtani from across town. That happened. Yes,
for a lot of money. They paid a lot of money for him. $700 million.
Yes.
Basically a billion.
Yes, Manny Machado. You can throw all those names at me, and I get it. They paid more money to Teoscar Hernandez than anyone else did. I get that. But think about they're two catchers. Homegrown, drafted, developed. Freddie Freeman, another example of a guy that they signed in free agency, traded for because Atlanta wasn't gonna pay him, whatever.
It's been great.
But think about all the holes, all the injuries that the Dodgers have had that they've been able to fill with their own guys. That goes under the radar because the storyline is money, 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 which it is. But I think half the battle, if not even more of it for the Dodgers, have been when they were at their quote-unquote nadir there in the late 2000s, early 2010s, the level they went to invest in their infrastructure to be able to be sustainable, where they can still pull off all these trades for all these good players because they know they can draft and develop so consistently.
Be nice to have that, wouldn't it?
It would.
We thought the Royals had that for a while, and they went off the path for a couple years and lost 100 and some games, and that was fun. Maybe they're on the way back, though. Maybe they're on the way back, Austin.
We do this from time to time just for fun. This one's going to make us cry. Let's do a Kansas City Royals first-round picks trip down memory lane here. And I do believe that the Royals are back on the right track. I think J.J. Piccolo and his staff, Brian Bridges, tipping my cap to you, sir. You've done a great job in 2 years. Pick a year to start with here.
2017.
Okay, and we will go forwards or backwards?
Backwards.
Okay. So,
and these are good years, but in the backwards.
Well, let me just tell you, let's just start with this most recent year. So Josh Hamm, Sean Gamble, we'll see. Jack Caglione in 24.
Love Cags.
Blake Mitchell in 23, the last Dayton Moore pick, I believe, or maybe that was the.
He's got potential, doesn't he? Is he potential?
Yeah, broke his hamate bone.
That's not Dayton's fault.
It is not. Gavin Cross.
Not great.
Frank Mazzucato.
Pitcher.
Asa Lacy.
Bad.
Might not be alive. Bobby Witt Jr.
Great.
Daniel Lynch.
Respectable.
Middle reliever.
Pick, not a first round pick worthy.
Jackson Kowar.
Bad.
Brady Singer.
Not horrible, but not great.
Nick Prado.
Bad.
Nolan Watson.
Never heard of him.
Ash Russell.
Never heard of him.
Chase Vallett.
Never heard of him.
Foster Griffin.
Never heard of him.
Brandon Finnegan.
Yeah, he was good for the World Series team.
Sean Manaea.
2014. Pretty good career. Injury pro. Not with the Royals, but he bounced around the league.
Who was Sean Manaea traded for?
He was traded for... did he go to the A's right away?
He did.
I should know this.
Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, I was getting there.
Hunter Dozier.
Bad.
Kyle Zimmer.
Bad.
Bubba Starling. Former Nebraska quarterback commit Bubba Starling.
Terrible.
Christian Colon.
Played the World Series, but not very good.
Aaron Crow.
Bad.
Mike Montgomery.
Bad.
Here's the run you're talking about. Hosmer in 08, Moustakas in 07, Hochaver first overall in 06, and Gordon in 05.
Yeah, Hochaver wasn't worthy of number one. He was a good reliever, bad starter. But yeah, that's a good run right there. Those guys all were big parts of the success they had for several years.
Then we get some really fun names. J.P. Howell.
Bad.
Someone named Matthew Campbell. The Royals' first pick in 2004 was a third baseman from Wolfson High School in Jacksonville, Florida, by the name of William Ray Butler.
Sounds like he's a royalty for the Royals.
Indeed. Billy Butler, high school third baseman.
Billy Butler. William what Butler?
William Ray Butler. Breakfast.
He's definitely a Billy. He got that right by that name. He's not a William or a Will. He is Billy.
He is Billy.
Billy Butler.
And
Billy
Royals,
Butler was good.
He was. I'm trying to think of the best comparison for him. Just quintessential doubles, gap to gap first baseman.
Slow.
He
hit some home run. Not a huge home run hitter, but pretty good.
2003 Royals cult hero Mitch Meyer.
Bad. Bad.
Played.
Bad.
Played. Chris Lubanski, Zach Greinke in 02.
Greinke was good.
Out of Apopka High School in Florida.
Was good.
Very good. Who is the former Nebraska football quarterback that attended Apopka High School?
Where's that at?
Florida.
Zach Darlington.
It is Zach Darlington. He nailed it. He nailed it, folks. He nailed it. Colt Griffin, Mike Stadolka. Here's a fun name. Jimmy Gobble.
Yeah, he's a pitcher.
Yep.
On some bad teams.
Mike McDougal.
Good closer for you. That was a hit. That was a hit.
Where did Mike McDougal attend college?
I have no earthly clue. Wake Forest.
Wake Forest.
I had a random guess.
Listen, no way. You were sandbagging. You were sandbagging.
I get some right.
You were sandbagging. You knew that the whole time.
This is why I don't take, that's why I give the trivia, because I get them all right. That's the way it is.
Gosh, that's incredible.
Thank you.
And then you have to go all the way back to Johnny Damon in 92 for a good first round pick. Between Johnny Damon and Apier in 87.
Yep. Kevin Apier was good.
Brian McCray in 85. Other than that, I mean, Buddy Biancolana, do we consider that a good first round pick?
No.
Clint Hurdle?
Hey, great manager. I think he's a great manager. I know he's not managing now, but he took the Rockies to the World Series, and he made the Pirates like a 98-win team. And people crap on him. I love Clint Hurdle. I will back him forever.
As you should.
Clint Hurdle is the man, and he should be managing somewhere. Unless he's too old now. But.
Yeah, he's a little old. Two former Royals went on to some pretty legendary in their own respect careers. Clint Hurdle. And how about this? Former AL Rookie of the Year, Lou Piniella. Played for the Royals.
Sweet Lou. Before he started going crazy and taking bases away and all that stuff.
That's part of the charm.
That is, he's charming.
That's part of the
Love
charm.
Love Sweet Lou.
Anyways, Dodgers and Blue Jays coming up in the World Series. Jake, I take it you are going with the Dodgers. How many games does it take for the Dodgers to go back-to-back?
No more than five. Either four or five. Yes, we probably go five. Let's go five games. Let's give Toronto one win.
I got Dodgers in six.
It won't go six, Austin.
I believe.
It's not going six.
I'm holding out hope for a fantastically entertaining series.
It won't be.
Toronto.
Because the Dodgers ruin everything.
They ruin everything, correct. But Toronto does have a couple horses in the rotation. I like their bullpen a little bit better on the margins. And that lineup is so much better equipped to handle the Dodgers pitching staff. Not saying they're going to have great success, but they hit for essentially the same contact rate as the Brewers. But you have actual dudes, legit studs in that lineup. Vladito. Bichette ought to be back. Obviously, Springer, what he did.
Vladito, nice.
Yeah.
Vlad Jr., Vladito.
Vladito, that's what they call him.
Yeah.
Can I interest you in Alejandro Kirk?
No.
The spiritual successor to Daniel Vogelbach?
The small kind of.
What about Addison Barger?
No interest at all.
Ernie Clement?
Nope.
Trying to think. Who else? Nathan Lucas?
Don't even know who that is.
Yeah, nor should you. Last final thing on this. At the Rogers Center, the Blue Jays have hit a game-winning three-run home run in the seventh or later to eliminate an opponent in all four rounds of the postseason now.
That's a stat.
2016 American League Wild Card Series, Edwin Encarnacion, who I always hate for his stupid parrot thing.
Yeah.
Always made me mad.
I think about Toronto, and I think about the Expos. I'm trying to think of guys.
That's Montreal.
I'm trying to think of guys in the past, and my mind goes to Vlad Guerrero Sr., Montreal, Jose Vidro, Montreal, Javier Vasquez.
Montreal.
Why can't my brain pick up in the early 2000s Blue Jays players?
Vernon Wells.
I love Vernon Wells. That's one.
Alex Rios.
Rios was not great, but he's a former Royal.
Carlos Delgado.
That's the one. Now we're talking.
Roy
Carlos
Halladay.
Okay, thank you. My brain is back.
Yeah.
That's some good players there. Roy Halladay was the man. RIP, Roy Halladay.
Indeed. Postseason legend. Roy, Doc, Halladay. Jake Sorensen, appreciate you sitting in.
You're welcome.
We got Brian Munson of Husker Online joining us for Husker Football Recruiting Update right after this on Old School.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Here we are on a Tuesday edition of Old School. Time for our recruiting update from Husker Online's very own Brian Munson. Brian, a very happy Tuesday to you. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing well. It's football season. There's, of course, some winds, maybe not of change, stirring in Lincoln. It's windy here. But holy cow, has it been a few days here in Huskerville reacting to Minnesota. You know, everything's great in the world. Nebraska's 5-1, and maybe I'm a little guilty of this, but one loss, and it seems like the entire world is collapsing, and Nebraska might not win a game again. You got people at the station promising to shave their heads completely bald if Nebraska goes winless the rest of the year. So what better to give us hope or give Husker fans hope for the future than a recruiting update? I know that 11 o'clock kicks are tough for a lot of people, but let's start there with Northwestern. Brian, what's it looking like on the recruiting front for Nebraska this coming Saturday?
Well, I mean, I think Nebraska was really waiting on getting that official game time kickoff start before they were able to kind of start going out there and securing a bunch of guys. I mean, I talked to like Juju Johnson, who is a 2026 athlete out of Pennsylvania that Nebraska actually has extended a preferred walk-on to. And you know, Nebraska wants him to come out at 11 o'clock on Saturday, but he's even admitting, you know, that could be a challenge. You know, that could be tough for him to kind of get out there. But Nebraska has, this is interesting, Nebraska has their first official visitor of the entire fall coming in this weekend in Damod Lewis. Damod Lewis is a three-star edge out of Charlotte, North Carolina, Myers Park High School, had announced a top five in early August or September. I can't quite remember which month it was in. And Nebraska was not part of that group. And Nebraska, you know, quickly kind of got back into the picture with him. I think Nebraska's in the driver's seat because I know the other school that was really hitting him up hard to kind of, you know, become, you know, get into the picture with him a little bit more was Florida State. And obviously they've got their challenges just like Nebraska does. So I think that's a really good, fit there because Nebraska's clearly looking for an edge guy to get in there to the class. They did offer another edge yesterday, a 2026 guy that's not sure yet when he's going to be able to take an official visit. So there's a couple of 2026 players coming in this weekend, and we know about them already, and I expect things are going to kind of get opened up a little bit more. 2027-wise, you know, you're going to get into some usual suspects. I mean, everybody loves it when Trey Taylor returns to town, and we're expecting Trey to be back in town this weekend. I expect Torrey Pittman to be there and Matt Erickson. But there are a couple of other interesting ones here to kind of mention. Khalil Taylor, who is a former Penn State commitment out of Pittsburgh, PA, is going to be there this weekend, as well as linebacker Gabe Jenkins, who is also from Pittsburgh, will also be in town. So some guys that, you know, that I think that we're kind of anticipating a little bit, like with the fallout with Penn State, you know, making their way to Lincoln, going to check out and see what the Huskers are all about. I know some people are thinking, well, are they visiting Nebraska? Are they visiting head coach Matt Rhule? Because Matt Rhule's a target. But I think people need to put that to bed. I mean, I think that the Minnesota game is going to cause a lot of people to hit the snooze or the soft pedal button on that one for a little while, because I think Penn State would have a major issue, you know, if they decided to extend a job offer to Matt Rhule right now with the way things went down on Friday night. They have to make sure they're not walking right back into kind of maybe the same kind of situation that they had with James Franklin. They're looking for a guy that can lead a program, not necessarily, and Matt Rhule's great at rebuilding it. You know, and I think he's looking for a way to kind of getting that over the top to keeping the program great and developing it. You know, but it's been a little different, you know, moving into year three in Lincoln. So, that's what we know right now. We certainly are anticipating. You know, I think it's going to be very similar to HCU, like Houston Christian. I think that there were between like 12 and 15 recruits there. I would say it's going to be very similar. The 11 o'clock start really hurts anybody that wants to travel in unless they got a bye. And you're not going to find a lot of buys here now because you're kind of in district action. So you're limited now to a lot of guys that, you know, can maybe come in just a shade late, or maybe guys that can drive up because they can get out Saturday morning early enough to get there. I mean, that's really what you're kind of limited to right now.
Which is where, Brian, the announcement of the 6:30 p.m. kickoff for Nebraska against USC on November 1st could loom large for Nebraska. From 12 to 15, you're estimating, against Northwestern. Too, I saw you wrote in your three and out between 50 and 60 potential visitors for Nebraska. Yeah. What would that mean if Nebraska can get all those kids to campus on the same weekend?
It's massive. It'd be the largest weekend of the fall by far. I mean, I think that we were somewhere between like 30 to 35 for Michigan. I mean, double that for USC is massive. I mean, I mentioned four people, maybe five people's names to you just a second ago about the Northwestern weekend. I know about seven coming in from the 2027 class already for the USC game. And I anticipate several more, you know, obviously coming in that weekend, but they got some big ones coming in, like Xavier Sabb and his brother Amari. Xavier is probably the better of the two. He's the younger of the two. He's a five-star athlete. He's like the number 20 recruit overall in the 2027 class. And then Nebraska's got guys like King Thibodeau, who's one of the more talented defensive tackles in the state of Texas next year. I confirmed Kennedy Green, who came in earlier this fall. He's from Mableton, Georgia. He'll be in there. You got Jax DeJean, Cooper's little brother, you know, coming in from Iowa. And several other ones. I mean, Kylon Haney, who's a guy that I've actually kind of feel like maybe could be ready to start thinking about pulling a trigger on committing to the Huskers. That's a big one. And then I another guy I really like is Alexander Herrera, who's down near me around the Fort Worth area from Crowley, Texas. Confirmed him a long time ago that he would be coming in. So it's going to be a massive weekend next weekend. And Nebraska didn't get what they wanted this weekend, but they definitely did next weekend. And I think that really plays with the plan, with the alternate uniforms, the bigger opponent. You know, you're getting your stage set for the nighttime game there. I think it was a terrific environment for Michigan. I think that they're absolutely going to be thinking about, you know, having that again, you know, when USC comes to town.
You hear the numbers 50 or 60, and at least to me on the outside looking in to the recruiting world, that seems like a huge number. Is 50 or 60 recruits a big number for anywhere across the country? Is that a normal size big weekend, or is that a big weekend even by big weekend standards?
It's a big weekend by big weekend standards. Look, it from a logistical perspective, it will push thresholds for span of control. And what I mean by that is that, you know, usually you got like what, 9 paid assistant coaches and 1 head coach. So that's like 6-1. You have several support staff, you know, obviously they're going to weigh in here. You get a guy like Trey Taylor to come back and Torrey Pittman to come back. You're going to sprinkle in some player commitments that obviously are going to help out with taking some burden off of the coaches and making people feel at home. But I think the first thing that Nebraska needs to do is kind of figure out in what perspective and what lens are all these recruits going to be looking at Nebraska? Is this going to be the first time ever coming to Lincoln? Is this their first game day in Lincoln? Is this a return visit, or is this like them coming back for the 8th time and they're already committed? And I think that if you can bucketize that properly, you can then bring them basically up the echelon, up the ladder, one more rung, and just kind of say, okay, we've done what we kind of hope to do. We got people familiar. We got them a little bit more information than what they had last time. They finally got to see a game versus just being here for a spring practice or for a summer camp, you know, or this first experience for them was just, you know, out of this world. And now we need to bring them back for a junior day. So I think as long as you can kind of get into those kind of swim lanes for the players that are coming in, you can plan this out properly. You can make this work. It's just going to push everybody there to make sure that something or someone doesn't fall, you know, between the cracks. And that's what you're hoping that you don't have. You want to have a very even keel, like across the board, same type of experience. You want everybody saying, I've got a chance to talk to everybody, or, you know, you don't want the one guy to stand out there and say, I didn't talk to anybody. And I didn't get a chance to see anything, you know, or anything like that. You want to make sure that it's a very similar experience for everybody across the board.
We're talking with Brian Munson of Husker Online. He's with us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Brian, you recently wrote about a commit, or not a commit, but a recruit with some ties back to Lincoln in four-star Cooper Terwilliger. What's the latest with him? How high is he on Nebraska's board and vice versa?
Yeah, Cooper Terwilliger is an interesting guy. I mean, his mom was born in Lincoln. They've had grandparents in Lincoln until a couple of years ago when they moved away. So he's actually, you know, been to Lincoln and been to several Nebraska games before in the past. So he has a familiarity there that's kind of built into before he was even a recruit that I think Nebraska has to really appreciate, because I think that, you know, us that have kind of seen the new addition of the new facilities, all the game day experience stuff that they've kind of added to everything, you know, the changes that have been kind of made. I think obviously then all the type of attention that recruits get, like under Matt Rhule, I think that there's several things that Nebraska has to feel very good about, you know, when it comes to a guy like that, and maybe contrasting or saying or make, showing him the improvements to things that he has seen like over the years. So Cooper is definitely towards that top of that board, because when you start for tight end, because when you start talking about next year, 2027, obviously the big catch is Ahmad Hudson. And I think everybody would agree right now that Ahmad Hudson is going to be a very tough pull to get him out of Louisiana. You know, it seems like he's destined to become a Tiger, at least at this point. You know, Cooper Terwilliger is no slouch. He's a very good athlete. He's got a really nice long frame. He's exactly what Nebraska is looking for, you know, when it comes to playing the tight end position. He's kind of a jumbo athlete again, but which is, you know, something I think Nebraska is definitely not going to say they want to start shutting off, you know, the need for. They want to start bringing in those kind of guys to put into that room. So Cooper is a big time playmaker. He's from, you know, basically Nebraska's backyard. And I think the Huskers would like to nail down all the guys that they can. When they want to cherry pick the 500 mile radius, I mean, they make those guys a true importance, you know, when it comes to the class. They're almost like given in-state kind of player status. So that's a big thing there. And Cooper's down to a Final Four. You know, it's like Iowa, Iowa State, Michigan, Nebraska. So he's going to stay in the Midwest. Three of those teams, obviously, in the Big Ten. So you don't want to be playing against a guy like this. And he does seem pretty fond of Michigan, unfortunately. So Nebraska, I think, has got their work cut out for them a little bit. I know Trey Taylor has been recruiting Cooper quite a bit, like on social media. It'll be good, like, when those guys get a chance, like, to get back together again in Lincoln and have a chance to talk about stuff.
Last thing then, Brian, people would not be happy with me if I let you go without talking about reinforcements in the trenches. Over the course of the last couple years, who's on the bench waiting for their chance to take the field for Nebraska? And what is Nebraska focusing on either the offensive or the defensive line here in the 26 and 27 classes?
Well, you know, the big announcement today was at 2026 defensive tackle and Penn State commitment Tevian Branch will be in Lincoln for a visit for the Iowa game. Tevian is a really interesting dude. I mean, this is a pretty good sized dude, and it's an official visit too. It's 6'4", 300. You know, he's kind of middle of the road when it comes to like the ratings and the rankings, but he plays a lot bigger than that. And it's kind of that big body that they're missing. I mean, I feel like he plays bigger and better than what his ranking kind of indicates. But I think, you know, Nebraska clearly knows that they're short guys. And I think Branch is maybe like their one, you know, they had Titan Davis on their radar earlier on before he committed to Michigan. And then obviously he kind of dropped off there. So Branch seems like the last kind of ditch effort, I think, for the Huskers to potentially grab a high school guy in the class. Otherwise, I think that they're kind of stuck going to the portal. But even if they're stuck going to the portal, you know, you've got guys that are there. Like, you have Malcolm Simpson that we talked about last year, you know, a pretty athletic defensive lineman from Galveston, Texas. He's been out. I think he had a surgery. You know, he's missed all season this year, and he was a late arrival in Lincoln. He didn't get there till June because he's a basketball guy too. So, I mean, I think people need to be looking forward to seeing Malcolm get on the football field. Everybody's seen Cade Pedshock, you know, and Pedshock is – had some really strong games and really strong performances. I think that everybody just knows he just needs to continue to kind of develop and get better. And everybody's familiar, you know, like with Tyson Terry. Tyson Terry showed up to Lincoln. Obviously, he had a torn ACL last season. You know, he's the kind of guy, I think, that people want to look at him and maybe say he's like a Hutmacher-ish, you know, kind of dude. I don't know if necessarily like the frame for frame, it's the same kind of thing between the two of them. But I mean, I think that, you know, the wrestling background, you know, always helps out. And I think Tyson's really probably chomping at the bit right now, thinking that he could have probably had a chance to see the football field and try to be an answer for some of the questions that Nebraska's having, you know, up front.
Then offensively, you think about the Bricks and Pyle class. How red do you think those guys will be, presuming their numbers called next year? And who are some of the other guys that Nebraska's in on that they hope can grow alongside those two into the future?
You know, it's really disappointing because I'm sure that right now Gibson Pyle, you know, who's been lost for the season as well, after seeing like Rocco go down, it puts a lot of pressure on right guard. I mean, I think that you know, you had a guy in Gibson Pyle who was probably running as like a number six to all of the starting offensive linemen. And this was like, you know, pre kind of like Teddy Prochazka and Turner Corcoran and what was kind of going on there, because you have like Gatula and Pritchett, you know, and then, but I mean, all spring long, I think Gibson Pyle was, you know, getting those kind of first team reps, you know, and getting things going with Rocco. So I think Pyle, like once he's able to return from his surgery in the spring, I think he'll be able to get right back out there and get on the football field. I mean, I'm excited about several guys that are out there, like Juju Marks. I think he's a guy that, you know, Nebraska fans, you know, we talked about him and his late flip from Kansas last year. I think that's an interesting guy. You know, Houston Torres, another player that played like in the Poly Bowl last year. You know, I think guys still in the pipeline, like a Sam Sledge. You know, I think you're going to start seeing some more of him. We didn't mention Talamua yet, even though like with like the Pyle and Bricks kind of mentions, you know, Talamua is part of that class too. Massive guy, but you know, got an illness, and I think it just kind of impacted his strength and just kind of where he went with his body a little bit right before the season started. So I think he's trying to work back from that a little bit. And then I think this class this year is very strong. I think that there are three of those players. I think it's Waterman and Puma and Leon Noyle that are all like in pursuit of perfect seasons there, you know, for their senior year. And those guys are really leaders. I mean, Puma is, you know, kind of a raw athlete, you know, more of a basketball player up till a couple of years ago, then moved over to football. And Leon Noyle playing out of position at left tackle, probably more of a right tackle, maybe even playing inside. Waterman playing tackle, probably more of an interior guy himself. I think I really like this year's class a lot. There's a lot of things that I think that they can do with that group. And I think there is some talent there in the background. It's just got to get guys to kind of step up and you know, maybe take on more of an aggressive approach. I think that's maybe what's missing just a little bit, is just a little bit more attitude and a little bit more of an edge there in the trenches.
There you have it. Great breakdown, as always, from Brian Munson of Husker Online, huskeronline.com. For more, Brian, as always, appreciate the time. Looking forward to catching up next week when we really dive into the visitor list and the key targets for Nebraska, USC, but Northwestern on tap next. As always, appreciate your insight, Brian.
Looking forward to it, man. We'll see you.
Brian joined us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Aloe Fiber is where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local heart. If you're headed to the Northwestern game and don't know what to do with your kids, babysitters gone or busy, whatever it is, our friends at the Lincoln Children's Museum have great options for you. They'll tell you about their game day play dates, get you set up for outside the box with the Lincoln Stars. There we go. Get my show straight, Outside the Box with the Lincoln Stars, coming up in about 10 minutes here on The Ticket.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Back one final time here on Old School. Austin Norman with you, getting you set up for the rest of your afternoon here on The Ticket. Told you about our friends at the Lincoln Children's Museum. They offer game day play dates for every home football game. Of course, coming up on Saturday, it is Nebraska and Northwestern with an 11 o'clock kickoff. You don't know what to do with your kids ages 5 through 12, the best place you can take them is to the Lincoln Children's Museum. Drop them off 90 minutes before the game, pick them up an hour after the game, and while you're cheering on the Huskers, your kids can enjoy fun activities involving science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, all centered around the theme of football and getting active. It's affordable, convenient, and just blocks away from Memorial Stadium. If you're interested, you register your child or children prior to game day by going to LincolnChildrensMuseum.org. It is NBA opening night, couple games on tap. It'll be the Rockets and the Thunder, as well as the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Lakers. First time since LeBron debuted back in 2003 that we will have an opening night without LeBron James. Did see this. This was pretty interesting on Twitter. The Rockets starters on opening night have combined for more career starts for Oklahoma City than Oklahoma City's starting lineup. So the Rockets starting lineup, Amen Thompson, Kevin Durant, Jabari Smith Jr., Alperen Şengün, and Steven Adams, only obviously two of those players have played for Oklahoma City. Of course, Kevin Durant and Steven Adams, but those two both started in the neighborhood of 500 or 600 games for the Thunder. KD obviously taking up a little bit more of that. But man, to have a whole team make, you know, fewer starts for a team that they were drafted by or played, you know, multiple seasons for, like the Thunder, a team with a lot of continuity entering this year, to have two players on your opponent have made more career starts for you than their entire starting lineup, just kind of funny. Really curious to see how opening night shakes out. Again, those two games tonight, and then the rest of the league will be in action starting tomorrow. Jay Foreman back with me tomorrow. Plenty more to get into. A fascinating day on the press conference circuit for Nebraska coordinators Dana Holgorsen and John Butler. We'll talk about that, get you set up for Nebraska Northwestern this coming weekend as well. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow starting at 3 p.m. with Old School. But for now, it's Outside the Box with the Lincoln Stars, your weekly disrupt with Mike Smith. And Mark Manning makes his return, a triumphant return, to take down Tuesdays coming up at 6, all right ahead here on 93.7 The Ticket.